This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more details.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey. To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host, Zachary Frueling, and with me, as always, are...
Suzanne Williamson and...
Kay Shaw.
Well, today we are going to be continuing our series on pairs of character moments, and we have moved on to Kes and Tuvok. What do you guys think of Kes and Tuvok?
Would it be Kuvok?
No, it would be Tess.
Would it be Tess?
Tess or Kuvok? I like Kuvok. That sounds like someone who's half Klingon and half Vulcan.
That's an odd combination.
Kuvok.
Yeah, that is an odd combination. I like this pairing. I really like these two together. They're an interesting dynamic because they're so different, and yet they just seem to work together somehow.
They both have this quiet, meditative approach to life, I think. So they mesh well in that sense.
They do, but I think on the one hand, you've got Tuvok, who very rarely shows any emotion, and then Kes is really quite... She's very sensitive, so she obviously feels a lot, and she, even though she doesn't sort of get emotional too often herself, she's obviously very aware of other people's emotions and quite empathetic in that way.
She's very empathetic.
So I think it's interesting that they get on so well. I think she probably understands Tuvok more than anybody else, weirdly.
I think she probably understands Tuvok's inner struggle more than other people do.
Yeah.
She's also taken the time to get to know him, whereas most people haven't.
Well, Tuvok doesn't exactly put himself out there for other people to get to know.
I know, but you gotta be persistent, you know? Not like Neelix persistent, but quiet persistence.
Yeah, and that's something that she's really great at. I just think that she takes people at face value a lot more than everybody else, and therefore she's always coming from a base of no expectation and no preconception with people. It's like everybody else has these preconceptions of Vulcans and she doesn't, so she can just take him as he is.
That's true. Other people are always trying to get Tuvok to change, especially Neelix, but to some degree the other characters too. You know, at the very least they troll him and they poke fun at him, and you know, Kes just, you're right, she just takes him as he is.
Yeah. Yeah, she just accepts him exactly as he is.
Which is what she does with the Doctor too.
Yeah, I think she just does that with everybody.
Yeah.
And she seems to do the same thing with Neelix, even though we don't see when they first meet, but she's obviously accepted him for who he is, annoying moments and all.
And of course, Tuvok is older, more experienced, wiser probably, and so he can serve this mentoring role that Kes needs, because Kes is still fairly young. She's still growing, still learning.
Yeah, she's like 7, isn't she, in dog years. We've had this conversation about dog years before.
You know, company years.
Kes is 7 in dog years.
Yeah. We'll call them company years. I won't call them dog years again. But it's effectively dog years.
It works the same way.
Pretty much, yeah.
I was really surprised as I was thinking about Kes and Tuvok before we started recording today, how few moments there actually are with Kes and Tuvok. The moments that exist are powerful, they're memorable. I think they establish a strong bond between these two characters. But there really aren't very many moments between the two, you know, one-on-one.
No, there aren't. And I was surprised when we did this exercise for B'Elanna and Chakotay that there weren't so many, but there seemed to be even fewer for Kes and Tuvok, and that really surprised me.
Well, I think that's a testament to how strong the writing really is, because given how few moments there are, these character relationships are well-established, yeah. they're well-defined, they're memorable, and yet they don't get much on-screen time together. So the moments that did exist were really well done.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of Kes and Tuvok moments, shall we dive in and start comparing our list? I didn't come up with five, so this isn't really technically a top five list. This is just my favorite moments, because I couldn't find five moments.
Just a list.
I think we decided we weren't going to do top five, didn't we, before? Yeah. We just decided we were going to talk about the relationship and then just throw some moments out there.
So this is more like a top three list than a top five list. So who wants to start? Suzanne, you want to start us off?
Sure, why not?
Go for it.
I would have to say the moment in Coda, where Kes goes to Tuvok to try and contact Captain Janeway's spirit. And she ends up getting frustrated and not finding what she needs, but still thanks him for taking her on that journey just to get some closure.
That's a good moment. That one was not on my list, actually. I had forgotten that one.
I did have that one down. It is a great moment, because it almost feels like they're both gaining something from it, because to me, like, Tuvok's obviously realized the fact that Kes's abilities have outstripped his by this point. Mm-hmm. She's got the ability to potentially sense things that he can't, and he just totally respects that and just lets her explore that and goes with her to help her, to sort of support her in exploring whether or not actually she has managed to sense Janeway. And then equally speaking, on the other hand, Tuvok manages, like he said, Suzanne, to help her to get some sort of acceptance of what's happened.
Yeah,
I think that's what I like about the Kes Tuvok moments in general, is that they're very equitable. They both get something out of those moments.
Well, there's a moment where Tuvok gets a little more than he bargained for in a different episode.
Yes. We all know the one you mean. Where she sets fire to his head.
Wasn't expecting that.
That's Cold Fire, is it?
It looked pretty warm to me, but yeah, the episode is Cold Fire.
Yeah, I actually had a Cold Fire moment on my list, but it wasn't Kes trying to set fire to Tuvok's brain. It was the moment at I think it's at the end of the episode when they're discussing her sort of dark impulses.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a fascinating discussion. Of course, it's Vulcans and Okampans, but human nature in general, the fact that all living beings have this kind of dark impulse that they need to learn to control or deal with or live with, that yeah. is always there, even for Vulcans.
Yeah,
and it's really nice to hear him actually admit that, because Vulcans generally just try to hold it all in and not talk about where they've come from and the difficulties that they've had trying to get to where they are.
And it's a fascinating scene, because the way it's shot, it's almost like they grabbed a cup of Vulcan tea and they're sitting down at a little coffee shop around a little bistro table, and they're just kind of analyzing retrospectively what's happened.
It's all very objective, isn't it?
It really is. It is kind of done from the third person. Like, neither one of them is really involved in what's transpired, but they're kind of, you know, taking the third person perspective on it. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Kes seems to, although I think right from the beginning she shows a great maturity that she probably shouldn't really have for the age that she is, you feel like she gets this ability to, like, maintain an equilibrium from Tuvok.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even though we don't see a massive amount of the two of them together on screen, there are lots of inferences, and they talk a lot of time about all the time that they've spent together and all of the hours that they've spent putting into honing her abilities and all the rest of it. So even though we don't see it, it's implied that it's there. And the bits that we do see give us the flavor of that.
Yeah,
we know that Tuvok and Kes are meditating together, and Tuvok is mentoring Kes regularly. We don't see it very often, but we know it's happening like once a week or twice a week or something.
Yeah, this constant meditation program, if mm-hmm. you like, and coaching that they go through is actually, it's mentioned in Warlord. Mm-hmm. I like this scene, although actually it's not really Kes. We get a little bit of Kes in it at the end, but it's an interesting scene because you just sort of get this, oh, has nothing ever happened between you while you've been meditating for all these hours together? And I was just like, oh my God, I never actually thought of that.
Is that in the episode?
Yeah.
I never caught that.
So when Kes is possessed by Tyrant, he says, oh, you know, all those hours you've spent, intimate moments touching each other's minds, you've never wondered about it.
Tyrant had a dirty mind.
He did.
So one of my moments was from Warlord 2. I like the moment where Tyrant, or Kes/Tyrant, is interrogating Tuvok, and Kes kind of breaks through Tyrant's control during the mind meld that they have, and she says, I'm fighting him, Tuvok, I'm fighting him.
Yeah, well, that's right after it, because he says that, and then he kisses Tuvok, and that's when he manages to get her in the mind meld.
Every time we do one of these top five lists, Kay, you come up with a kissing moment.
Yay!
She pays close attention.
Is that true?
No, I'm just joking.
I don't remember there being a kissing moment in our Janeway in 7 week. I'm pretty sure I'd have remembered that.
We theorized where it could have happened.
That is true. We did it. We inserted one, but there wasn't.
That's
one
because we agreed we wouldn't count your fan fiction.
There's always kissing in fan fiction. Always.
That's just a great scene all around. We've managed to pick two moments out of the same scene. That was quite impressive.
We're doing better than Suzanne usually does, counting an entire episode as a moment.
Hey, that is true. You're never going to let me cover that. Just going to hold it over my head. And I happen to remember where somebody else did it a few weeks later, but that's never mentioned. Ooh,
guilty.
Again, is
guilty
it?
Is charged. Yep. Guilty is charged.
Yeah. Always comes back to Suzanne did it.
Oh, I love the way you say that. Like, we never pick on Zachary and we just pick on him all the time.
We're supposed to.
We do rib each other pretty good.
He likes it. It's fine. He likes it.
Well, I'm going to get us off of Cold Fire and head on to resolutions.
Hey, I was waiting for somebody to bring this up. In fact, I was surprised it hadn't come up already, to be honest.
Well, I didn't want to, you know, throw it out there first thing. Yeah. Wanted to ease into it.
I think that's a great moment because it shows how much Kes is able to make an impact with Tuvok. You know, everyone tries to convince Tuvok he's wrong in that episode, but Kes is the one who actually is able to convince him that he needs to reconsider his decision.
If anybody was going to change Tuvok's mind, it has to be Kes.
I don't think anyone else on the crew could. Maybe Neelix could have done that.
No way. He would have kicked Neelix out of the
No, you don't think so?
Yeah.
I can picture him now. Mr. Neelix, I have made my decision.
Yeah. I love this scene. I think this is probably my favorite Tuvok Kes moment. Just because it's nice to see that Kes has grown to the point where she can be right about stuff when Tuvok's wrong. Mm-hmm. And Tuvok's, you know, always Mr. Right. He's always the mentor. He's always the one that knows exactly what to do and guides her. And it's almost like it's a mix of her guiding him and also persuading him with this, like, really quiet manner that she has about her, this gentle, quiet manner when he's being persuaded and he doesn't even realize that that's what she's doing.
Well, Tuvok needs reminding that the crew's feelings matter, right? And he basically hasn't been taking that into account to this point.
No, and that is what she gets across to him. But I find it interesting given the fact that he actually says when he goes out onto the bridge, oh, well, I can't let the emotions of the crew sway my decision when I'm being the captain and I've got all this responsibility on my shoulders. I can't let that sway me and so on.
But...
And yet he's let it sway him.
Only because it's Kes.
Yeah.
Well, you know Tuvok is going to sort of retcon his decisions after the fact. He's like, oh, well, it was the logical thing to do. Yeah.
He can twist his logic any way he wants.
Exactly.
That's its power. And its flaw.
And its flaw.
All Vulcans do that. They make decisions that are not as logical as they think they are, and then they explain them after the fact with logic talk.
Even if we hadn't have known that Janeway and Chakotay were not going to stay on the planet for the next 6 seasons... We would have known from the fact that, as we've said previously, Tuvok was still wearing his yellow uniform. And it's been like 3 months or something. I think unless you actually pay attention to the star dates that are mentioned in resolutions, you don't realize how long it's been, but it is actually about 3 months.
But you could tell by the size of the Talaxian tomatoes that Janeway plants, because she plants teeny weeny ones and then as they're leaving there, you know, they should be producing some fruit.
Yeah, maybe they're super fast growing tomatoes, I don't know.
Or is it just because you say tomato?
Tomato? I don't say tomato.
You said tomato.
I say tomato. Tomato. I did not say tomato.
Tomato.
It's a tomato.
Every single time you guys try and do an impression of me, you make me sound really posh, and I'm not.
So that was a good moment. You know, you guys are doing better at this than I was. I forgot that moment too, but that's a great moment.
Wow, okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is probably my favorite, actually.
So one of the moments that I had written down that was, if not one of my favorite moments, it's at least a memorable moment. It's where Kes starts to get her telekinetic abilities and she begins to see below the subatomic. And Tuvok is like, there's nothing beyond the subatomic, Kes. And she's like, yes, there is. I just find that interesting. It's in The Gift, I think, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that moment. You know, it's just so mystical and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, it ends up going quite wrong in that episode because...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She needs to leave or the ship will go bang or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's really interesting to see her grow. I really like in this episode, actually, this is slightly going off Kes and Tuvok, but just her in general. I like how much older they managed to make her look. Because, obviously, at this point, she's 3 years older, essentially, or two and a half years older, probably, at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And she just really... They managed to make her look that much older in this episode than she has previously. And you almost sense the fact that the maturity is there and she's ready to go off.
She's got crow's feet now.
Yeah. And the hair, you know.
Or she was just squinting a whole lot and they stuck there for a little while.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I know you're not a huge fan of the pixie cut, Suzanne, but I think it actually, yeah, it works well earlier because it makes her look younger, I think, than she actually is. So later when they want to make her look older, it's easier because they just give her normal hair.
Yeah, have some normal hair. You'll look old.
Yeah. Here, have some normal hair, you'll look old. That's not quite what I meant, but okay.
So I should get a pixie cut to look younger.
She is only 21 in dog years by this point, so she's not that old.
I know some 21-year-olds with crow's feet. No, I actually, it's not so much a Tuvok Kes thing, but I actually really like the way they visually depicted her peering into the subatomic. I think it was just so cool and interesting, you know. It's one of these early attempts at digital effects in Star Trek.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see how they actually did that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just remember that being very memorable as a scene.
Yeah.
It's not a great Tuvok Kes moment. I mean, she's just like, oh, I can see in the subatomic. And he's like, Kes, there's nothing beyond the subatomic. She's like, yes, there is, Tuvok. And then they show it and it looks
cool.
You
don't know everything.
I don't know, though. There is a really nice and interesting bit in this scene. Because at the end of the scene, after he's telling her to stop what she's doing, because it's obviously, you know, I don't know whether Vulcans get freaked out, but it's giving him a level of concern. And he's like, I think you should stop now. And she says, oh, I can try and control it.
Well, he's wise enough to know she can't control it yet.
Yeah, and then she says, don't worry, Tuvok.
Don't worry, Tuvok. I'm just going to unravel the entire fabric of the universe.
Yeah, you know? It'll be fine.
No problem.
It's all good. It's all good.
It's almost like in the past we've seen this... Like with the bit you mentioned in Cold Fire where, you know, she accidentally melts his head. What else can you say that is what happens?
Well, after that, he's got reason to be skeptical, yeah.
Yeah, but at that point, she panics and she's like, Tuvok, help me.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she doesn't even know whether he can help her. And he obviously doesn't know how to help her. But at this point, I just feel like we see now that she's got to a level where she's got that faith in herself. And she's the one reassuring him, not the other way around. That's why I feel like it works really well in this episode, because then obviously she goes off to be a light being or whatever she does.
Yeah, she's like, trust me, Tuvok, I can control it. And Tuvok, last time you said you could control it, you almost melted my brain.
It was an accident, I promise.
And this time, she doesn't almost melt his brain. So she's definitely grown as a person.
That's character growth right there. You know, once you've progressed beyond melting someone's brain, you're growing as a person.
Definitely. I think that's one of the best bits of character development we see in Voyager, to be honest.
So do you guys have other Kes and Tuvok moments? I've got one more.
Well, it's not actually technically a Kes and Tuvok moment. It's a Kes and Tuvix moment.
Oh, Tuvix.
That might be my last one. We'll see.
Oh, okay.
Now I'm sad.
It's basically the bit where he's talking about how he loves her. And she's like, how can you say that? What about Tuvok's wife? It's like, oh, but I have Neelix's love for you and Tuvok's love for T'Pel. Oh, yeah. It hits you in the feels, that one, definitely.
It does.
The guy who played Tuvix did a great job.
He was amazing. He was.
I like where the Tuvok character inside of Tuvix comes through a little more, and he basically says to Kes, I know how hard this is for you, because that's something Tuvok would say. He would recognize your struggle. Yeah. Whereas the Neelix part is just, you know, he's still in love with her or whatnot, but Tuvok recognizes that it's not easy for her. Okay, can you imagine a rewrite of Tuvix where it's not actually Tuvok and Neelix that get fused together, but it's Tuvok and Kes?
Oh, ooh. Wow, that would be weird.
Come on, that would be interesting.
I read a fanfic where it was Jane Wrench Cote.
I read that same fanfic.
Yeah. It's hilarious, isn't it?
It was good.
There would be a lot to work out, like what that would actually be like and look like, and the biology would be kind of strange, but
yeah, it was kind of strange in the story.
Yeah, would they be hermaphroditic?
Probably.
Well, one or the other. It would either be androgynous or hermaphroditic, one or the other. It would be an interesting mix, because I could see Tuvok and Kes, their sort of mental, meditative, you know, mindset would mesh well together, but you know, Tuvok's anti-emotional, repressed emotional mindset would not mesh well with Kes's more sympathetic, emotional mindset. It would be interesting to see what tension would ensue if that were the character. You know, if we did have Kuvok or Tess. That would be an interesting rewrite of Tuvix that we should do one of these days.
Yeah, it would be. And it would be interesting to explore that. Because like we said before, you know, they've got obvious similarities, but they've also got really obvious differences.
Yeah, exactly.
And the blend of that. Because whereas Tuvok and Neelix are just complete polar opposites.
That would be a lot of internal struggle that I don't know that you could portray on screen.
Mm. Would this mean that Neelix would be in love with Kuvok?
Yeah, probably.
I think he'd prefer Tess.
Kuvok would be in love with Neelix.
I think we'll have to bookmark that one and do that on a future Tuvix rewrite.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do with that. Have a play around.
No limericks.
Limericks are not appropriate for transporter accidents. Nobody wants a transporter accident limerick.
A haiku might work.
Oh yeah, transporter accident haiku. Yeah, we could work with that. We'll save that for our Kuvok episode, or Kivok episode.
Kivok, that's not bad. Kivok, yeah.
My brain's just reminding me of that Janeway Chakotay story now. Chakway. Why they didn't use her first name, I have no idea, but they called it Chakway. That should be your entry point into fan fiction, Zachary.
Send me the link.
It's beautiful.
Okay, you mentioned that you have another Kes and Tuvok moment or two.
Oh, I have a small little moment actually from Meld. We talked about Meld quite a bit actually when we did our Tuvok Unhinged episode. But I thought I'd just touch on that scene where he's in sick bay behind the force field, trying to get out or trying to persuade Kes to let him out, and then trying to persuade Janeway. I just thought I'd touch on this one because Kes is trying really hard to be strong about the whole thing and to reassure him, but that look on her face when he's trying to get out of the force field, she just looks like horrified and sad and worried and just all this stuff all rolled into one.
Yeah, like she can't believe this has happened to Tuvok.
Yeah, just so much stuff there all rolled into one, and it's just a great moment. It really is just that little bit there. Because he sort of tries to persuade her to let him out, which she resists. But then when she sees him, it's obviously so incredibly difficult for her to see him like that.
Well, she does such a good job of emoting without any words. You know,
you
can just read her face, yeah.
Because they sort of cut between all the three faces of the other three people that are there, the EMH, Janeway and Kes, and they all have these different expressions on their face, and Kes just seems to encompass so many different things. She's just a bit of a maelstrom of different emotions there, and I just think that highlights, for me, in a way, the complexity of their relationship. She's concerned for him, but she's also worried for herself and how well she's coping with the situation, and she's scared of what's going to happen, and just everything all bundled up. So I like that one.
Well, you said something interesting there, Kay. You used the word maelstrom, and that as close as Kes and Tuvok have become with their mentoring relationship, really it's kind of a maelstrom relationship too. I mean, Kes is trying to set his brain on fire and Kes can peer beyond the subatomic. You know, someone is taking over Kes's mind. They got to do a mind meld. There's, you know, it's a pretty intense relationship. It is like a maelstrom.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Now that you've said that, probably half the moments that we've talked about are of this kind of really intense situation. It's weird because the ones that we remember are the ones where they're sort of sitting down meditating, they've got the lamps out, they're talking through things. But they go through some stuff, yeah. They really do.
It's a Vulcan Okampan maelstrom. You'd think with Kes and Tuvok it would be like a cool zephyr, but it's actually more like a maelstrom.
I just like that word. It's a good word. I don't get to use it often enough.
Zephyr or maelstrom?
What, zephyr?
Both. They're both good words. As long as it's not a sexy zephyr like we had last week.
That was a drugged up zephyr.
It was, yeah. It was like, go home, zephyr, you're drunk. There is one more actually I could talk about, but I don't want to talk about it if you guys don't remember it, because I wanted to ask you about what you thought about it.
No, go for it.
It's in Darkling. It's just a little moment where Kes has obviously forgotten to go to bed, and she meets Tuvok in the corridor and she says good evening, and he says it's 3 a.m. and then she realizes what time it is, and then he reminds her that she's got an away team report due in the morning. And then they just sort of, that's it. That is literally it. But then he looks at her really weirdly at the end of it. She walks off, but he looks at her with the weirdest expression, and I was just trying to gauge what he was actually thinking, and I wanted to ask you guys what you thought.
So I do remember that episode and that moment. I'm trying to remember Tuvok's expression. I don't remember it being it's almost like he's a little concerned, but it's a little quizzical, but I can't read too much into it.
I just really didn't know quite what he was... It seemed like more of an expression than we'd normally get from Tuvok, and I was just wondering what they were trying to do with it.
But it's also 3 a.m, so maybe Tuvok's not quite awake yet either.
His duty shift's almost over. He's been up all night. He's just ready for bed.
Yeah, you think that's all there is to it?
He wants to put his Vulcan night robes on and curl into his warm Vulcan bed.
Sleepy Tuvok gets emo.
No, I think the reason you asked the question, I think, is because Tim Russ has this great ability to, you know, convey expressions without any words. So he gives you this kind of quizzical look, and you're like, you know, something's going on in Tuvok's mind, but you don't really know what.
Yeah, I think I just want to know what's going on in his head there. I guess maybe he's just wondering what's going on with her.
Yeah, I would say it looks some combination of concern and being quizzical.
Yeah. Anyway, there's not much more to the scene than that. I mean, they just happen to run into each other in the corridor, and that's about it.
But even the corridor scenes are worthwhile with Kes and Tuvok.
Yeah, I think, again, it highlights that complexity there, because I find it difficult to believe that he'd have that same reaction if he ran into pretty much anyone else in the corridor at that time in the
morning.
Well,
yeah, I mean, imagine Tuvok walking by, you know, an ordinary run-of-the-mill crewman, right? He would just sort of say crewman, and they'd say lieutenant, and then they would move on, right? And that's yeah. It. He's concerned about Kes because, I mean, your average crewman, he wouldn't express concern about. He's not expressing an overabundant amount of concern, but he is saying, Kes, it's 3 a.m.
It's like he turned into her father at that point. It's 3 a.m. Shouldn't you be in bed?
What's up with you, Kes? It's 3 a.m.
Well, I mean, she did tell him that, you know, she didn't miss her dad as much when she met Tuvok. So she obviously sees that father figure in him for her.
Well, like we said already, I was really just surprised how few moments there really were, but how powerful they were. But I think we did get an interesting observation that the moments that Tuvok and Kes do share are actually fairly intense. You know, we get mind melds, and we get Kes blowing up Tuvok's brain, catching it on fire. We get Kes peering into the subatomic. They're really dramatic moments, and there are these sort of quiet meditative moments, but not as many as I had remembered there being.
Yeah, I agree. I thought there were more than there were.
Well, you guys, it's been fun talking about Kes and Tuvok, or what we've now termed Kivok. But this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week, so here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Best of Both Worlds. It's a good episode. I enjoyed it. I remember when it first took off. Family was 100 times better to me. I'd watch Family 10 times to 1 over watching Best of Both Worlds or Inner Light. Those are the types of things that interest me. And I do enjoy the action-adventure pieces of it. I truly do. But I love seeing the characters, and that's why Wrath of Khan works.
Warp 5.
It was just mesmerizing to me. And I remember when my dad, a long time ago, had an airplane. He would take us up flying, but never, you know, would hold the wheel and say, hey, we're flying an airplane. But I never really was bitten by the flying bug. But it happened right there on a runway in Hawaii, on Oahu.
The 602 Club.
And we saw it in the first Alien as well. I mean, like, the company sent them to the planet to bring that alien back, right? And I didn't remember the part where, in this film, where Burke sent the colonists to go and find the ship on his own without authority from the company. I had forgotten that part. So that was kind of an interesting revelation, seeing this movie for the first time in 12 or 13 years, however long it's been since I've seen this.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly, and it makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, and now also on Google Play Music and YouTube as well. And of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link.
Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take a moment to thank the rest of the To The Journey team from around the network. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek FM, our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shea Metalla, our Patreon manager. We'd also like to give a really big shout out to our associate producers, Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, and Richard Marquez. Thanks very much for your support of Trek FM and of To The Journey.
Also remember to head over to Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and get your seat on the mission. And check out audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Well, if you'd like to contact us about Voyager in general or anything we've said today, there are loads of different ways you can do that. If you go to our website at trek.fm/contact, there's a form there. You can also leave us a voicemail if you look in the sidebar on our To The Journey show page, or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. We're on Twitter at trekfm. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And while you're on Facebook, check out the Babel Conference. That's B-A-B-E-L. It's Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group. It's a closed group for listeners only, but if you click on join, then somebody will let you in. You can also find it by clicking discussion on the menu bar on our website. We also invite you to leave a rating and a review of To The Journey on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. We would love to hear your feedback and any suggestions you have for the show. Well, Suzanne, when you're not melting other people's heads, where can our listeners find you?
You can find me occasionally in the Babel Conference, or you can contact me on Twitter at KJaneWay8. That's the letter K, Janeway, and the number 8. Zachary, when you're not recovering from a transporter accident that melds you with another crew member, where can people find you?
Well, you can hear me elsewhere on Trek FM as co-host of Metatrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy, along with my co-host over there, Mike Morrison. You can find me in the Babel Conference if you want to talk about Voyager or Star Trek with me there. And you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Frueling. And Kay, when you're not wandering the corridors aimlessly at 3 a.m., where can our listeners find you on the Trek FM network and around the internet?
Well, they can find me in the Babel Conference. And if they want to look me up on Twitter, my handle is Choco Weeble.
Well, be sure to join us next week when we will be podcasting from beyond the subatomic. But until then, this has been To The Journey.